Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined by top London radio DJ and certified Japanophile, Mr. Pete Donaldson, Pie Master.
Yeah.
Pete, how you doing?
Who doesn't like certified a pie, Chris? That's what I'm saying. Who doesn't like a pie? How you doing, man? Chris, I don't want to upset you or disturb you, but I am topless. I am shirtless at the moment. It's very hot in the studio and there's no one around because it's the end of the World Cup and a lot of my business is World Cup business. And so I've taken my top off.
But do you have a pie?
I don't have a pie.
Now that you are certified.
A certified man.
I don't know how that came out. I've been saying certified Japanophile for like, what, 50 times now. I don't know how many times we've done this podcast, like 25 times.
25 times,
and that's
yeah.
the first time I somehow bungled it with certified. But somehow I prefer certified.
Yeah, I think
good,
so.
That could be your YouTube channel name when you go into the world of pies. Certified Pete.
A pie in Japan. And I just go around searching for pies. Ramen pie, katsuoboshi pie.
Can't work.
What was that thing I sent you last night that I... is it dango? That horrible mochi-related dango. Nonsense.
Yeah, so it's like... dango is a rice dessert, a rice kind of cake dessert. It's rice that's been beaten up into mochi, kind of fluffy, sticky substance, bit of sugar, and then whacked on a stick. And you, Pete Donaldson, ladies and gentlemen, sent me a picture of dango, of this lovely Japanese thing that's been in the back of his fridge for God knows how long.
Oh, no.
How long was it in there?
No, you're thinking that's been in my fridge. No, that was a picture I found from the past and sent you it to sort of say, I bought this, and it was disgusting. Because I thought it was going
like dango
to be caramel. I was expecting it to be caramel-flavoured, because it looked like, you know those kind of milky caramel desserts you occasionally get when you're...
Yeah, they kind of glaze it in a kind of sweet soy sauce.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
So I wasn't sauce, expecting yeah. it. And I remember sort of walking around Harajuku going, this is disgusting. Who would even eat this? And then I was...
I would.
Yes, you would. Yes, you would.
I love it. I used to... I used to get them actually from the supermarket. I would have it as my kind of dessert. But then I always felt a bit tired afterwards, binging on like... rice on a stick.
Very starchy.
It's good. I like it. It took a few years for me to actually learn to like it. But yeah, if you're in Japan, ladies and gentlemen, you see Dango, give it a try.
See Dango, eat Dango. Dango Unchained in your mouth.
I knew that was going to come up somehow.
It's easy peasy, isn't it? There's a band called Django Django, so Dango Dango. I was watching one of your brethren on Tokyo Creative eating foods that to foreign palates is actually quite unpalatable. I'm not being funny. She wasn't great at it. She didn't like any of the food she was eating, pretty much. The dried octopus, the seaweed, the natto. She had no ruck with the natto. And also something I don't think I've ever tried, umeboshi.
Umeboshi, oh
is
my
it like a,
Christ,
is it like a
pickled,
pickled fruit or something?
It's like, it's a cherry that's a sour... cherry or plum. Sorry, plum. It's a sour plum, and you put it in your mouth, and it's the most sour thing I've ever had. I've had Warheads, you know, the kind of American sour candy. It's like that times five. You put it in your mouth, and it's like your mouth just implodes, and your whole mouth's flooded with saliva, and it's just horrible. So I can't eat it. Fair play to Emma, Tokidoki Traveller Emma. She can't eat it. I haven't watched that video, though, so she couldn't manage... octopus,
well, she
ate, dried seaweed,
she ate everything.
Natto.
She didn't enjoy natto in particular. But the umeboshi, like, I think I might have had it. Is it particularly drying on the mouth?
Quite popular in onigiri. Like you get a rice ball with it in the middle of it. I don't know who would like that.
Yes, I have had it in one of those little rice triangles.
Rice triangle. Yeah, I've never really understood the appeal of it. I've never understood the appeal of natto. Mm. Dried seaweed doesn't really do a lot for me either. Octopus as well, if it's battered, maybe, but on its own, yeah. So I'm on her side. I mean, I don't know about you. Which of those would you actually enjoy eating then?
I told you before, I've acquired a taste of natto. I mean, nobody enjoys any of those foods that were on the list, to be honest. But but it's one of those things where you go, I mean, if you had like a lineup, I wouldn't choose to have it. And she had the red bean paste as well that you always find. If you ever buy matcha ice cream, which is kind of the thing in London of summer of 2018, everything has
green
got matcha in it. Everything's matcha ice cream. Everything's like matcha, mochi, whatever. They always, if you ever have like a Japanese dessert, they will always hide bloody red bean inside. You think you're expecting like chocolate or strawberry sauce, and it's always bloody red bean paste every single bloody time.
What, you don't like red bean paste either?
Again, it's one of those things that I've acquired a taste for, but for anyone who's like not expecting it, they're like, oh my God, what the? This chocolate has gone off.
Right, yeah. Kind of anticlimactic.
Hugely.
You're expecting chocolate and it's not. It's something healthy.
Hugely. Blah. Oh, man. So what have we got on the menu today?
Not been a good week or two for Japan, has it?
No.
I thought today we would touch upon natural disasters in Japan, and it was triggered by an email or a message I got from someone, a viewer, who said, hi Chris, I'm coming to teach in Japan soon, and I have a question about moving there. Are natural disasters like earthquakes and landslides often, are they something that I should be worried about? And this is a kind of message, an email I get quite often when there's a serious natural disaster. So this week we've had flooding, floods everywhere down south, and also now a heat wave, which is been causing problems. But first things first, the flood. So last week in West Japan, pretty much kind of Hiroshima, Shikoku, Kyushu down the south, they got 50 centimetres of rain in just like one day. 50 centimetres, half a metre of rain. Because the rain landed in the mountains, it came down in the form of a flash flood, right? It kind of funneled down the mountains and swept over lots of rural villages and towns. Killed 200 people. It led to 250,000 people without water in Hiroshima and 5,000 people in shelters. And it's quite a surprising event, you know. It's one of the things that you don't really expect to happen in Japan's flooding on that scale. It's usually an earthquake, a tsunami, a typhoon or a volcano. So this one's kind of an odd one. And our very own Ryotaro got caught up in it because he was giving a seminar. Ryotaro is a travelling consultant. He goes to companies around Japan and kind of teaches them how to interact better with foreign customers. Anyway, he was down in Hiroshima giving a seminar, and about 2 hours before his seminar was about to start, they said, sorry, Ryotaro, you're going to have to cancel it. The village town hall where you're doing the presentation is being turned into a shelter because of the flooding.
Yeah.
So he got caught up in it. It's been a pretty big deal. And then straight after that, just as people were trying to get over that, a heat wave turned up and has kind of led to 2,000 people going to hospital with heat strokes. 8 people are dead. And it's kind of all in the media at the moment, in social media, people complaining about the heat. And it is brutal.
Yeah.
I had a friend in the UK who messaged me the other day saying, oh, it's so hot here, it's 20 degrees. And I was like, yeah, it's 38 degrees here. Yeah. So
bloody hell.
I'm not particularly sympathetic to people in the UK at the moment, including you, Mr. Shirtless Pete Donaldson.
Mr. Shirtless Pete Donaldson. Yeah, it has been very hot here in London. And yeah, it has been approaching like 30 degrees, which for us, it's fairly difficult because we don't have air conditioning. Obviously, Japan does, and America and places like that.
True.
We just don't have air conditioning, so it's been quite difficult. And there has been medical problems, but nothing to the scale of, you know, 39 degrees. And it always hits the elderly first. That's the sad thing. And obviously, with Japan's aging population, I imagine that's a bigger stress on these services than anywhere else in the world. And the actual rainfall, I read something that it was like a month's worth of rainfall in half an hour. Now, you plan for like you plan your infrastructure around things happening and things not happening. There's no way you can plan for that. That's insane amounts of water.
Well, I remember when you were here last year, and we went and did some radio, some local radio in Yamagata.
Oh yes,
we had a whale of a time. There we were, and then we ended. We came out, and it absolutely, I've never seen rain like that in my life. We were going to walk just like one block back to our hotel, but the rain was so bad that we couldn't. We had to get a taxi, and even though the taxi stopped right in front of our hotel and there was about 3 steps, by the time we got out of the taxi and into the hotel, we were soaked through. And I remember vividly that you were so soaked in those 3 steps that you decided to go back out into the street and dance in the rain. I'm going to dig out that video and put it on Twitter for all to see. But these things happen. It's the sort of rain that I've never seen in the UK. I don't know why it's so much more severe here. Something to do with the currents, the weather, I don't know. But it really takes you off guard.
Yeah.
It's really brutal kind of weather. You can get an umbrella out, but it'll do nothing because the rain is so hard, it bounces back off the pavement and wets you up until your waist anyway. So kind of umbrellas don't really work against this kind of rain.
Yeah, I find that the drops just seem bigger. Like, you know, like, I don't know what it is.
Drops.
Like, yeah, they seem bigger, and because it's warm, you never really get dry, and it's just a bit, goodness. But,
treacherous drop.
I would say if you're coming to Japan or going to Japan for like a holiday and you're expecting wall-to-wall sunshine, you probably will be disappointed at some point because for a couple of days, it will just rain. But the thing is, it'll rain for an hour, get it out of its system, and then just move on. The sun might come out after that.
Fingers crossed. I must admit, I factored it in for the upcoming cycle, right?
Yes.
I wanted it in September because that's the perfect kind of temperature, not too hot, not too cold. But it's one of the wettest months in the calendar. So I had to do it in October in the end. And even then, October's pretty kind of a wet month as well.
Mm.
So I'm quite worried that I'm going to be cycling through somewhere and then it's going to downpour and then I'm going to drown on a bicycle. Or just the whole, like, if it happens for like a week non-stop, it's going to ruin everything. Because how can I make a video out in the rain? Or maybe it'll be more entertaining for viewers watching me swear non-stop for 7 days straight in the rain. But yeah, it's something that I'm a bit worried about.
I'm looking forward to you standing soaking wet in Bic camera trying to get replacement lenses and camera equipment, crying.
I bet you are. Horrible boy.
Horrible boy.
I thought we would touch upon some of Japan's natural disasters and have a quick look and see how dangerous Japan is in terms of natural disasters. Now, the country's ranked as one of the most volatile countries in terms of natural disasters. Mm. That's probably no surprise to most listeners, given that Japan does have earthquakes, volcanoes, tsunamis, typhoons. It's on 2 major plates, as well as being kind of precariously positioned in terms of the weather. So it does get pretty much every natural disaster you could think of. Have you experienced any of those, Pete?
No,
in Japan or anywhere.
The only adverse conditions has been just a little bit of rain every now and again. I've never experienced an earthquake. It's no small wonder that the Japanese aren't particularly religious, because if you believed in a god, you'd be a bit confused about as to why God sees fit to try and murder its citizens every few months with an earthquake, for crying out loud. So, yeah, it's an interesting dynamic there. Literal dynamic.
Very true. Very true. I mean, we've had, since 1995, there's been three major earthquakes. The first one was the Great Hanshin Kobe earthquake in 1995, which we talked about. We touched upon it a few weeks ago, because there was another earthquake near Osaka, which Natsuki found himself caught up in, at least in terms of not getting on the train because it was cancelled. But the reason, 6,400 people died in the Hanshin earthquake, which is a big number. But one of the reasons was most of the buildings that did collapse were built before the new kind of anti-seismic design standard came into effect. One of the most impressive things about earthquakes, including the 2011 Tohoku earthquake, was just that you never really heard about any buildings coming down. Mm. In fact, of the 15,000 people that were killed in the disaster, 92% of those casualties, those who died, were due to the tsunami, right? So tsunamis far more dangerous than earthquakes. And you can see videos. You've probably seen videos of the Shinjuku skyline rocking backwards and forwards. I would not want to be in a skyscraper in Tokyo when there's an earthquake. It's absolutely terrifying. If you haven't seen it, go on YouTube, have a look. Shinjuku skyline, Tohoku earthquake, 2011. And you can see them rocking, up to 2 foot, 3 foot, backwards and forwards, like a rocking horse.
I don't like that at all.
What would it be like being up there?
Not very nice. I know you get told all of these things that these buildings are weighted in a certain way and tethered in a certain way, and their foundations are a little bit different to anywhere else in the world. But there's still something very upsetting. And also, there must be so many people who are after the earthquake inspectors who would just who just go in and check foundations and check how secure buildings are and stuff. It's crazy.
I hope there are, because the building I'm in, the apartment block I live in, built in the 1980s. And it rocks like the dickens. When there's an earthquake, you really feel it. I'm on the fourth story, and it's just horrible. Even now, it scares me a little bit. Mm. As I've mentioned before, when I moved to Sendai, I was shocked by the number of earthquakes I felt, because over in Yamagata on the west coast, there aren't half as many. I don't know why. I think maybe because Sendai is closer to the plate or something. But yeah, it scared me a lot. There's a lot more earthquakes. They're far more frequent over this side. Although that said, in Sakata, the town I used to live in, Yamagata, there was an earthquake once. My friend told me about where a crack appeared in the ground and a little girl fell down the hole, and then the crack sealed up again.
What?
Like a Roland Emmerich film, like 2012 or something. It's a horrible, horrible thing to picture.
That is unspeakable.
So you're never safe in Japan. It's insane. But we've had three major earthquakes. So we had the Tohoku 2011 earthquake. There was also the Kumamoto earthquake 2016, which a lot of people may recall. 40 people died, but it did level. That did level quite a few buildings and caused quite a lot of problems down south. But those are, three major earthquakes in the last two decades. And whilst we did the worst one, 15,000 casualties, again, that was thanks to the tsunami. That was due to the tsunami. But if you compare that to the 2004 Indian Ocean earthquake and tsunami, that killed 260,000 people.
Yeah.
Now, that is obviously because that was in the third world primarily. But Japan, it's adapted pretty well to natural disasters. And I've never really felt threatened in the time that I've been here in the last 6 years. I've not really felt threatened by it. And most people you talk to in everyday life don't even think about it. If something happens, it happens, and you'll have to deal with it afterwards, but for the most part, people don't worry about it. And I would never let it stop you, anybody listening who's considering coming here. I wouldn't let it stand in the way of you coming to Japan. Don't let that stand in the way, because it's not going to be as big an issue as you think it will.
And then
there's the volcanoes.
Yeah.
which another a whole other kettle of fish. But again, there's not been that many incidents there. We had Mount Ontake, which erupted in central Honshu between Nagoya and Tokyo. That went off in 2014, and that killed 63 people who were on the volcano climbing it, because it's a popular climbing spot. But again, yeah, volcanoes haven't caused too much damage over the last two decades either.
I can only sort of go on my own sort of experiences, but like London, for example, we don't have natural disasters. Something that has affected tourism and affected the way that, say, Americans see coming to London to visit, or coming to Europe to visit, really, international terrorism, ISIS, all that nonsense. You know, young men blowing themselves up or
nonsense.
You know, knife attacks and shit like that. I think I sort of witnessed after 7/7, where I think 20 people died, 50, 60 people injured on the tube when a few suicide bombers blew themselves up and part of the train. I saw London come back to life, and I saw London kind of recover. It was a long road to recovery. You know, just the simple act of getting to work was quite a tense one. Some younger people who'd sort of moved to London, they'd never seen terrorism in London. And so I witnessed them sort of firsthand dealing with stuff like the London Bridge attacks, the Borough Market attacks and stuff like that, and Westminster Bridge, etc. And they were really scared. These young guys, these young girls were really, really scared, and they were like, oh, my God, I don't want to live here anymore. And at the time, I just sort of said, play the percentages, for crying out loud. Don't let them win. Don't let the earthquakes win. Don't let the volcanoes win. Like, not that they're a sentient being or anything, but, like, play the percentages. How many people live in Japan? How many people live in Tokyo? How many people live in Kobe? How many people live here and there and everywhere? It's almost arrogant to think you're going to be caught up in it. It's almost arrogant to think you're going to lose your life. It's almost arrogant to think you are going to be the one who's affected in any small way with it. So if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, you can't live your life like that, can you?
No, absolutely. It would be ridiculous to live your life in fear of things like that. Although, I mean, when we were doing Natsuki the movie, we filmed on London Bridge.
Yeah.
And I think we were joking, like, oh, imagine if there was a terrorist attack here. You know, how awful would that be? And then it happened about a week later. We were like, oh, God, some absolute idiot got in his car and drove over some people and caused all sorts of issues there. And then when we were in Paris a few days after that, we went to Notre Dame and filmed in that area. And then just a few days later, there was some crazy guy, some terrorist with an axe or something going around there threatening police officers. So these things do seem to pop up. But I've passed through the airport at Turkey after it got bombed. I passed through the airport in Brussels, which also got bombed the other year, just after it happened. I went through Nice, where there was that terrible incident with the truck. Passed through all sorts of locations where things have happened, but you just can't let it get to you.
You can't let it get to you, and you forget that a lot of the world has to deal with this upheaval, this displacement, and these problems every day of their lives. And if we're getting a little taste of it, it's only what the rest of the world experiences on a daily basis. And I think we should be thanking our lucky stars that we don't experience it more.
Absolutely. Only thing that scares me is bears. Bears.
Got to ring the bell.
Well, I like bears, but there is a genuine risk. Like, I remember when we were nearly every time you're in a forest in Japan, there's always a big sign saying, be careful, bears. And I'm like, bears. And again, I've got the statistics of bear deaths.
Bear deaths.
The worst year in Japan, 2006, 3 people were killed by black bears and 136 were injured.
Holy moly.
So if you do meet a bear, odds are you'll survive, but it might be a bit painful. But I must admit, it does make me a bit wary. I remember I used to cycle on the plane where I lived in Yamagata, and I'd cycle towards the mountains. I'd start going up into the mountains, and then I'd just see a sign with a picture of a bear on, and I'd be like, fuck that, and sort of turned around and went back onto the plane.
Well, they say they don't attack out of necessity. They just attack if they're scared. And you're supposed to, like, ring your bell as you go around the corner so that they scarper.
That's right. Yeah, when we were doing a forest trekking in Aomori, the day of the North Korean missile, as I mentioned, we were going through the forest, and every time we turned a corner, the guide had to he just clapped his hands really loudly and shouted. And I didn't know why he was doing it first. I was like, is he mental? What's going on here? And then he was like, bears. And I was like, bears? And apparently you have to do it every time you turn a corner, because you don't want to turn the corner, startle them, and have an awkward situation with a bear. Interestingly, though, in terms of protection against the black bears, he didn't have a gun or anything. He had like a little spray, a bear spray.
A bear spray?
Like Lynx. Yeah, it looked like Lynx or something.
A bit of Lynx Africa.
Lynx Africa.
Bit of Axe Africa.
Lynx Africa deodorant. He had a spray, and I was like, is that going to help us against the might of a black bear?
I think mace would work the same, but you're more likely to spray yourself in the face, aren't you, really?
I probably would, yeah. Take this bitch off!
I'd instantly get it in my own mouth. God. Oh, spicy. Oh.
Do you know what bear is in Japanese?
Ooh.
I haven't tested you on your Japanese in a while.
No, you haven't actually. That's
because we haven't had enough time in these recent podcasts. But do you know what bear is in Japanese?
I don't know what bear is.
All right, so the word is kuma.
Kuma. Kuma. Oh, that's nice.
K-U-M-A. Kuma. Yeah, it's nice. It's kind of cute, isn't it?
What's fox again?
Yeah, kitsune.
Oh, kitsune. Yes. Kitsune Maison, I think, might be some kind of record company. Might be one of the markets.
Well, next time you're walking through a forest in Japan, beer in hand, because let's face it, you're Pete Dolson. Oh, you'll be in a forest with a beer, enjoying yourself, topless, shirtless, no less. And you hear a Japanese man running towards you going, Kuma, Kuma, Abunayo. You'll be like, what's that? At least you'll know now what he's talking about as he runs past you in desperation.
Kuma, Kuma.
You're prepared for that very situation.
Mm, as I sip my one cup.
One cup sake, one hand. Bear in the other.
I just throw that in his face. He'd be like, ah, oh, dirty. Disgusting.
It does taste pretty horrible. One cup sake. Do you actually like that stuff?
No, I think I might have mentioned on this podcast before, on the first night in Japan, this girl who was showing me around said, oh, meet us in Yoyogi Park and we'll have like a little picnic with all the other mates of hers. And I turned up with a couple of drinks, both of which were one cup sake, and everyone laughed at me like I was some kind of weird alky. It's like drinking special brew.
You absolute peasant. If you turned up to my party with one cup sake, you wouldn't be coming through the door, mate.
It'd be one of the big ones.
I mean, it's all right. It's manageable. If it's your first time drinking sake, I think you could get through it. I think you can do it.
Yeah. I mean, you would have to, wouldn't you? It's one of those things. Well, it's one of those drinks that I think seems more alcoholic than it is because it's just so aggressive and it tastes like petrol. Whenever I've stayed in an Airbnb, there's always been a discarded, unopened big can, jumbo can of one cup sake from Asahi in the cupboard because someone's bought one and went, oh, I'm not drinking the other one, that's disgusting.
The drink of choice for Airbnb. Airbnb customers.
Usually.
Brilliant.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets, featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania. Too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
And to my surprise, I stumbled across a secret, sexy club.
Wow.
Let's dive into the fax machine. Mm. You guys have sent in, as always, lots of awesome questions and emails. What have we got, Pete? What have we got to go with today?
Well, we're going to kick off with Gabby, who got in touch via the email address, which is, of course, abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com.
I was going to say it myself.
Oh, sorry,
Chris. It's my job. I love it.
Hello, Chris and Pete. Hope you are both doing well. We are. I'm topless. I had a question since I'm about to have a Japanese roommate. I'm a college student in America, and we'll be sharing an apartment with four other students, one of which is a Japanese student who is studying here for a year. I was wondering about the general take people have on foreigners watching anime. The general reaction here is being called a weeb or weebo or weeboo or something along those lines. Is it different in Japan, though? I'm a bit embarrassed about it and wondered if it would negatively impact their perception of me if they found out about my weebism. Also, is there anything I can do to help her feel more comfortable here? Gabby.
You know what a weeboo is, right? You've heard this word before, because I hadn't heard it until 4 years ago.
It's the sort of thing you hear on 4chan quite a lot, along with waifu and stuff.
That's right. I mean, it's kind of like otaku, someone who's geeky, but to the extreme. With a weeaboo, the definition of weeaboo is somebody who kind of renounces their own culture in favour of Japanese culture and kind of wants to become totally Japanese. And I've probably met, in my 6 years here, I've met maybe three or four people that are like that, and they are a little bit weird. but often people that refer to themselves as weeaboos aren't weeaboos, they're just like using the word, they're more like otakus. And going to Gabby's question, I don't think your Japanese roommate's gonna think you're weird just by watching anime or manga. I've got lots of friends who are otaku kind of people who are a little bit geeky, and they're pretty open about that. It's the problem with otakus is that image, isn't it, of being somebody who's not socially very good. It's a bit introvert.
Yeah.
So, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a geek, as long as you still talk to your roommate and I'm actually just a nice person, I don't think it'll be an issue, you know, if that makes sense.
Hugely, hugely. And also, like, you sort of look at it and sort of go, well, if you're into something, if you're not fanatical, but if you're into something, that makes you a more interesting person. And, you know, they'll be familiar with some of the culture, they'll be familiar with some of the situations the characters find themselves in. So it's not like, and you know, chances are they might quite like a bit of anime every now and again too.
Absolutely. So, I mean, your last question was, is there anything I can do to help her feel more comfortable here? I don't know. Maybe invite her to watch some anime or speak to her in some Japanese. Or, I don't know, give her some umeboshi, some sour plums.
To her about bears, the Japanese, which I have instantly forgotten.
Kuma! God damn it, Pete. That word's going to save your life in September when you come here.
Bears don't know what they're called. Bears don't even know they're Japanese. I remember seeing a dog in Japan and thinking, does that dog know it's Japanese?
That's a profound question.
It is, isn't it?
Like, do androids dream of electric sheep?
Pretty deep.
Do Japanese dogs think they're Japanese? Right, next question is from Harvey. He says, hey guys, any thoughts on racism in Japan? A fun one. Any personal experiences or things you've witnessed? What's the general attitude towards people of other ethnicities, considering the lack of diversity? Sorry for not having a more positive question. It would be cool to hear your thoughts. Cheers, Harvey. Pete, what racism have you experienced?
Well, people of colour have a very different experience. Mm. They move through the world very differently to any of us. I wouldn't like to comment about what black experiences are in Japan. Anecdotally, I've not seen much of it. I imagine there's a few more kind of gossipy kind of situations when you're walking through the more rural settings if you're a person of colour. But there's probably close to the same amount if you're a gaijin walking through that same space. So I don't think it would be a massive deal. You know, 9 times out of 10, you're a foreigner, whatever the hell goes on, to be honest.
Have you never been on public transport in Japan and found there's an empty seat next to you despite the train or bus being really busy? Because that's a pretty common thing.
Oh, really?
And I wouldn't go... I don't know if I'd call that racism, but it's certainly a sign of something there, you know.
I mean, I do blow off quite a lot. So I just assume it's that. But I've never experienced that.
That's something I experience frequently.
Right.
Even, you know, I get that every day when I'm on a bus or train. There's always one empty seat next to me.
Oh, I see.
And I think it's just a lot of people in Japan don't encounter foreigners that often unless they're in a major city like Tokyo or Osaka. So if there's an empty seat next to a foreigner, maybe it's just easier to stand because you don't know what's going to happen. I think maybe that's the thinking. I don't know.
Well, you might suddenly
flip
out.
There's that uncertainty.
And start shouting, bears, bears. Oh, that man's mad.
Like Tourette's with bears, yes. I think, I mean, Japan is a high uncertainty avoidance culture, so they don't like uncertainty.
Right.
And sitting next to a foreigner on a train or a bus represents the highest level of uncertainty, potentially, you know. But in terms of racism, no, I haven't really experienced that much. As I've mentioned before, a lot of people often cite the signs on doors where they say, like, no foreigners allowed. But often that's just because the people that run the shop are either terrified of speaking English and don't feel they can provide top-level service quality because they can't communicate with their customers, or it's just some shady yakuza, or it's kind of a gentleman's little club, so it's just a kind of local club of people that don't want outside people just walking in randomly. So there's usually something there. It's not that people are just inherently racist, so... Yeah, it's I've fearful. Not really had that many experiences here. If I had, I would be the first to talk about it. I'd be the first to bring it up. And I do know a friend of mine who's black. He says he's been stopped by the police relatively frequently.
Right.
I think more than white foreigners living in Japan.
Yeah.
So that's a factor. But I can't speak for him, really. I can't speak for them. But generally, I don't think you'll find it's an issue if you come here. I really don't.
And we think that policemen stopping people of colour in Japan is an issue.
Well,
it's
just
as much of an issue everywhere else in the world as well, because
absolutely.
The world is frequently shit, and people are scum.
Quote of the day.
People are scum. People are scum. Are people scum? That'll be the title of the podcast.
last question, Pete. What have we got?
Okay.
Adam from Melbourne.
Oh, hello, Adam. Good day, Pete and Chris. I reckon this person is from Melbourne, as you just said. Love your show. I listen to it every week while driving. While I'm on the subject of driving, Chris, I love road tripping in other countries and really want to drive around in Japan, but I've heard from many people that it won't be an option for me because it's so expensive, mainly due to tolls. I watched your old video about driving in Japan and wondered, what is your opinion? Cheers, mate.
Pricey. He's right.
Is it?
Adam's spot on. It is pricey. Yeah.
It is.
Like, it costs from here to the other side of the other coast of Japan, Yamagata, where I used to live, 2 or 3 hours. I think it costs like $60 or something like that. $60. And that's just on tolls. And then you've got petrol and fuel and stuff. So it's pricey, especially coming from the UK where we love just not having tolls. I used to frequently drive around the UK, and it's just so nice not having to worry about tolls. But it is an issue. But at the same time, I find that if you do drive on highways around Japan, you do miss all the best bits, because the highways, they go through tunnels a lot of the time. They're elevated, so you can't see things.
Right.
If you're on a highway driving through Japan, you do miss a lot of the scenery. So my advice, avoid the highways, go down the back streets, and you'll see and experience a lot more diversity and a lot more interesting places, you know.
Usually.
But it is pricey. I remember driving all the way down from Yamagata to Osaka once, and it was like $200 or something, $200. And so on the way back, I vowed to take the country roads and avoid all the highways. And the journey went from being 14 hours going to being like 3 days returning. And I actually ended up getting lost near Mount Ontake, the volcano that we just talked about. It was 2014. It was a few months after the eruption. And I started driving up towards Mount Ontake because I took a wrong turn. And I remember driving for a few kilometres up towards the volcano, and I thought, this is a bit wrong. It just doesn't seem right. I haven't seen any cars in a long time. And then I just hit this wall, this barrier, and it was like loads of warning signs saying, Mount Ontake, don't keep going. Like, you can't go further than this. And I had to turn around and go all the way back. And eventually I did cave in halfway through the trip. I did just take the highway because I was like, screw this. I need to get back. And yes, I don't want to get lost in any more volcanoes. So don't. It's my advice, Adam, steer clear of the volcanoes if you do go on the if you do go on a road trip.
And don't drive into tip any, presumably, as well.
Don't drive into any.
No.
But yes, do send us your questions in, guys, to abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. That's all for now, though, isn't it, Pete? We're off now. You're off to get your shirt back on and do something productive, I hope.
I want to go outside and have an ice cream. I might just have a nice lolly, in fact. Or maybe. Do you remember oysters, Chris? Do you remember, like, oysters? They were, what? Like, the shape of an oyster. But it was like the...
Ice cream?
Yeah, it's like a, it was like a kind of like an oyster shape sort of thing. It had mallow in the bottom.
Yeah.
And then you'd have ice cream on top of it.
You go and do that.
All right.
And I'll go and drink some coffee.
All right, darling. Woo-hoo. Well, we'll speak
We'll be back
next
same
week.
Time next week, guys, on Wednesday. But for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, enjoy yourself, have a great week, and we'll see you next Wednesday. Bye, everyone. Bye, Pete.
Bye.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more. Then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.